Right. So, Nadine, when you're ready with the loaded question, you go right ahead.
All right.
Carol, you get to go first. All right, I'll make Ron go first. That'll give Carol some thought time. Okay. That's great. Okay, Nadine, when you're ready.
All right. All right. Well, after listening to everything we've listened to all day today, our esteemed panel of experts, many of whom are depicted in visual pictures for you folks online, on the slides, we're going to ask them some tough questions. And the first and prime question is, you have a fleet of ambulances. Five. And they're your common garden variety ambulances. And I ask each of you, from what you've heard today, in 1.5 or is it 2 minutes?
Two, exactly.
Exactly 2 minutes. I would like you to describe what you would do over the next 3 to 6 months to improve the safety performance of your services fleet.
Mr. Thackeray, go.
So starting with opening the back doors, I would find a stretcher that I'm able to load without exerting extensive physical effort on behalf of the crew. I'd want that to be powered. I'd look at seating positions that allow my crew members to best assess and treat their patients faced in a forward or angled or 90-degree position to be secured, to have restraining devices. If I were to transport children, I'd want to transport them in a safe manner on the stretcher. I would equip the interior of the patient compartment such that equipment is secure, is within arm's reach, that I don't have any protruding objects. I would recess my handrail on the roof of the unit so that it doesn't protrude. I'd decal the ambulance so it has high visibility, both with paint and decal. I'd probably build it on a Sprinter chassis since the cab compartment is that much better.
30 seconds remain.
And I'll yield to the floor here.
Can I ask a question?
Certainly.
Would you make an investment in a telematics system different from the one that you might have in your five fleets, your five vehicles?
Those that I talked about earlier, I'd love to have those capabilities that Mercedes has in its passenger vehicles in the ambulance.
But he's done with time, right?
Yeah. Yes, he is.
Okay.
Carol?
Are you ready to click the timer?
Oh, yes.
Okay, she's clicked the timer. In addition to what some of the things he mentioned, I certainly would make sure that there are no protruding or heavy bars sticking out. I would want to make sure that there was a GPS system actually installed into the vehicle. I would want all the equipment to be securely stored so it would not be released in the event of a sudden turn or an accident, and to make sure that the medications are also stored safely. I probably put a little sticker in there that says, please remember to put on your seatbelt, just like the patient has on. And although I don't mean to sound snide, but I would also add a stack of pamphlets that's in a shelf in the ambulance for the providers, so that if they happen to transport a legislator or someone in the community, that they can have a list on there of how much EMS does and how we need funding so that not only can we stock the ambulance appropriately, we can afford to train our individuals, knowing that things we do with the vehicle are not enough. We need to make sure that our drivers are trained. We need to make sure that our dispatchers are trained. And we also need to make sure that, that we have the access of training those in the community as well as other stakeholders in our emergency care system, the need of regionalization, resource utilization, and other safety measures that we can bring to the individuals themselves, because it's the people that matter. The people being the EMS personnel and the patients, and the vehicle we can do a lot with, but you can only do so much with vehicles.
Nice job, and 3 seconds to spare.
Do I hear an amen?
Amen.
Amen. Amen.
The other thing is, we do have Chris Fitzgerald online. How about we bullet him the full
Okay.
time?
Chris, go ahead.
Chris, what are your suggestions? Is Chris turned into a pumpkin?
Okay, thanks.
There you go. You're good. You're good. Loud and clear.
I would actually lead a data-driven approach, so I would actually review my data systems. I would probably find that they're inadequate. And then I would, based on references such as those provided today, I would start to instill a database system that's going to give me real information. Next step I would do is I'd actually actively engage my entire workforce in the process of reviewing what works and what doesn't work, because we can be technical about our changes or improvements, but you really have to take people along the journey. So it's important to engage them at the outset. I would then, part of that process, prioritise what elements of my system I can retrofit. And probably for me a priority would be the side-facing seats, if in fact those fleets have them. And if they do, I would be prioritising the retrofit forward-facing. And I know that's constant. And paralleling with that, there'd be what else is there access in terms of equipment. So there'd be a retrofit program within a current vehicle, depending on the projected life of the individual vehicle. And then I would start to look to what are the new technologies that I can adapt and implement to not just support safety, but the whole operational assessment. And then finally, I'd start to engage with my vehicle replacement program in terms of using this data to give myself a new platform as I go forward and build new vehicles. That's all.
Thank you.
Thank you. Jean?
What I would start with is looking at preventing the accidents directly. As a can you, everybody can you hear me okay? Is this better?
Yeah.
Okay. I would start with working to prevent the accidents as opposed to correcting the consequences of the accidents themselves. If I was a rural EMS facility, I would work with the drivers and the operators so that they understand speeding is dangerous. Loss of control is a huge issue in a rural environment. I would work with the drivers to get the EMS cowboy mentality out of the picture. I would introduce a feedback system to measure the way they're driving, but I would especially work on educating the drivers not to cross the yellow lines, not to use the lights and sirens unless absolutely necessary. If I was in the city environment, crossing yellow lines at intersections, I've seen too many ambulance situations where the ambulance is surprised at people on the opposing drivers because they're on the wrong side of the road. That would be a fundamental, no, you don't do that. Lights and sirens get turned off at intersections. You go with traffic flow. Then once you're in the open road, maybe turn the lights and sirens on again. What else would I do? Equipment retention in the interior. Make sure there's no potential of flying equipment. I would add some visibility capability, potential to both the ambulance as well as the uniforms, especially at night. Dark uniforms, middle of the night, they don't make a lot of sense. So, and that's about what I would do.
Thank you. I can't see who's next to you. There you go. Thank you.
John.
Thanks.
Thank you. First of all, I think I'd look, it was already said, but I think I'd look for what I would call the ideal stretcher, which would be lightweight with power. I think that for me that would be an ideal stretcher. I'd review all the materials in the vehicle for safety, corners, etc. Make sure it was safe and that there was no areas that of concern. Redesign the interior so that medics can really slide around and move and reach for all the necessary equipment that they really need. I'd replace all vehicles with sprinters, that's for sure. Even though I talked about it, I would install Ace Tech or a similar system in all the vehicles, and I'd recommend that. Redesign the seats to allow the seats to flip up. Install voice communication into our current Marvelous system so we don't have to push the buttons anymore. Focus on driver training. I would make an effort to improve our workplace wellness programs immediately. Definitely involve field medics more than we do today. Have field medics involved in vehicle design and safety features for vehicles, as well as engineers. Sometimes they're the best engineers. Don't mean to say that, but sorry. Increase education around safety design as well with medics. And I'd look for and install preemptive preventative systems wherever possible. And some of those we've seen today, like the ones on the Mercedes. And the last thing, and this is a big one for us in Ontario, is I'd reduce the amount of equipment that medics have to carry and take into homes, residences, because they're pack rat and they will take in too much equipment. And in Ontario, we're legislated to take in a lot of equipment that's just been changed. But I'd decrease the amount of equipment, certainly.
Thank you. Al?
Okay, the first thing I would do is retention of the equipment that's loose on the truck. That's not
closer to the mic.
Closer? That better?
Yeah, you don't have to hold your finger on the button. It'll stay on.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good. It's not a two-way.
No. Well,
guess what? Okay. Anyway, the tie-downs for the loose equipment, that's a big concern. Probably the second thing I would do is change out the child safety carrier seat, as it's called, at the front of the ambulance. Everybody puts them there, and that's the wrong place. So we've quit doing that since last year, and now the seat manufacturer, one, is making that so we can put it in the other front-facing side seats. Other things, a backup camera is a pretty easy install. Graphics are cheap. Reflective tape is cheap. Additionally, if we were buying new trucks, of course, I would recommend a Sprinter. They come in two sizes, you know. They make a 170.
You're stuck with your old trucks. You got to retrofit.
Okay, so but they said that. But I do want to say that you can't order them now with side safety curtain airbags and side airbags. And it's only it's less than $2,000 option. So we just found that out. I kind of want to throw that out. That's kind of neat. And besides that, you can get rid of those big trucks that are way oversized that we've got lumbering down the road.
And your quote.
Al, you have 1 minute remaining.
I forgot my quote.
44,000 pounds of truck for 150.
Oh, I figured there's 14,000 extra pounds of truck for the patients that you're carrying over a Sprinter, so in payload. So if you've got patients that are weighing 14,000 pounds, then you could probably justify the big truck. Otherwise, I don't know why people are buying these things, but that's it. That's about all I got to say.
Thank you, Jim.
Yes. All right. I'd do all what they were doing, and that if money is no object, I'd replace it with helicopters, because for many of us, the helicopters are a safer mode of transport than the ground units. So, all right, our ground-based fleet, it's about people, number one, and in correct training, I believe is the number one priority that I would have. I would consider professionalizing the driver. And if money were no object, I would have professional drivers who had no responsibilities for patient care, and all of our vehicles would move through. I would essentially blow up the back of the ambulance and remove cabinetry and other things that aren't needed back there, and replace it with a simple assembly in the back. The telematics and what we're referring to as the black box, I believe, is a vital compliance program for the driver and for the vehicle operation itself. I also believe we carry way too much equipment around with us and would greatly simplify We're working on that now with drug shortage, meaning that drug boxes are going to go in empty because we're so short on all of our medicines. But that's a reminder, we can get way too complicated in our system and be carrying far too much, and that leads to more being stuffed in all kind of compartments as you're either walking into the house or carrying it around in the back of the ambulance as we move through. You really have to personalize the operation to whether you're doing rural and big city and all that. And I can't make any dramatic statements that we can make a uniform operation across our many different operating environments. Motorcycles are great if you're a place where it's dry most of the time and can quick access. But as soon as you have really wet places, I don't want our medics to be soaked or snowed on as they're trying to move through. I really don't think that's adequate. And I really believe our professionalizing the driver operation gets us out of the situation where they're using their mobile data terminals and other pieces of equipment because they're the only single provider and they're having to use it. Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah, there is an opportunity for questions. I want to be just honor the agenda there and open the floor. And otherwise, I thank the presenters for being so innovative on short notice.
All right, I think we're up to our next slide, but my computer didn't change the slide. I don't know what happened there. Next, just there's one slide following that one. If we just turn the page, click the mouse. There we are, that's it. Now we're ready for our wrap-up with Art Cooper. So whilst all of us were sort of dozing and daydreaming and texting and typing and sending emails, Art Cooper's been diligently summarising the activities of the day. I don't know, I think his presentation is loaded, but I don't know how to turn it on.
It is loaded there, yes.
Yeah. Now, Art has a 7 o'clock plane, so we can be sure that all will be done in a timely manner today. It's good?
Yeah. Good afternoon, everyone. It is late in the day, and I will not take too much of your time. I'd like to, as always, thank Nadine for the opportunity to work with her. All of us know Nadine. She's one of the most creative and innovative and brilliant people working in EMS. We all owe her a great debt of gratitude for bringing us together again to see where we've been and where we can go still. And of course, behind every successful woman stands a man. and that would be Rick Payne, who has for these past several years supported this initiative, believed in this initiative, and made sure that the Transportation Research Board of our national academies in the United States has continued to support this most important effort. Just as a parenthetical comment, I do believe that what has happened here in these summits over the past few years has in large measure forced an acceleration of the thinking about the culture of safety in EMS in many, many, many other venues. This group taking the lead and getting out there and calling for these initiatives, I think, has been something that while perhaps under-recognized and certainly undersung, has had a major, major impact far beyond the walls of this room. And, of course, far beyond even the telecommunications that are connecting us with various places throughout the world. So much for my editorial comments. Let me just move forward here quickly. There we go. Now, if you don't think we have an EMS system in the United States, just try to change it, okay? As we all know, it's perfectly designed to get the results that it currently gets. There are many reasons for this. And a very famous public health professional once said, the problem with public health is it's in government. Of course, our problem in EMS is that we're often linked with public safety, so everyone thinks we're getting the goods, when in fact, in reality, it's lumped with public health, which means we're not. No better illustration of this than the study done by the NYU Center on Catastrophic Disaster Response a few years ago, which documented that of all the disaster preparedness dollars that had been received or had been dispensed by our government prior to the year about 2006 or 7 when that conference was held, police and fire got about 96% and EMS got about 4%. When, in fact, of course, our National Incident Management System states as its major goal the preservation of life. Go figure. In any event, it's clear to all of us in this room that EMS is underappreciated, undervalued, and hence, since this is America, underfunded. Now, what's old in EMS safety, and what's new? What's old is inadequate funding. Yes, it would be great to buy all those new sprinters, okay? And in due course, it will happen. They are cheaper than current, boxes on wheels, no doubt. Very few ambulance services have the wherewithal to purchase an entire fleet of sprinters, in short order. And of course, we're also dealing with inadequate training, especially among our volunteer sector. As anyone who knows who's working in the volunteer sector, the moms and dads of America are running the Boy Scout troops, the church auxiliaries, synagogue auxiliaries, are the lieutenants and captains in the EMS squads. They're doing it all. The same group of the dwindling people, the same dwindling group, the people aren't dwindling, the dwindling number of outstanding people who serve our volunteer EMS services are increasingly being asked to do more and more with less and less. And I'm speaking not solely of dollars, but of time. There just isn't time for them to get the kind of training that they need. Hence, every time we talk about expanding the EMT basic curriculum, there's a huge hue and cry from our state EMS director saying that their systems cannot handle it. Where are we going to squeeze in the patient safety education? The refrain, we've always done it this way, is alive and well, and will be alive and well, for a very, very long time, life being what it is. Well, that's what's old in EMS safety. What's new? Well, there's been, as Nadine pointed out in our first set of slides, an exponential, one might say explosive growth in teleinformatics. We have better vehicle and system engineering. 2 years ago, we all sat here and talked about many advances in vehicle and system engineering that were just beginning to be developed. And today, we've seen not perhaps a full flowering, but a real expansion of the capability of vehicles to provide safe transport for the sickest patients, and system engineering systems in terms of accelerometers, black boxes, feedback systems, and so on, that we were just talking about 2 years ago that have now been adopted by several EMS systems throughout the country and the world that you saw talked about today, okay, in glowing terms, I might add, because they work. Okay, and along with all of this, there's been an increasing awareness, okay, of the need for safety, and hence a shift toward a real safety culture at EMS. Okay, have we gotten there yet? No, of course we have not. As we all know, or we wouldn't be sitting in this room. but we're further along than we were a couple of years ago. And God willing, if we make the kind of progress with the EMS safety culture during these next 2 years that we made with the vehicle and system engineering in the last two, we are going to be leaps and bounds ahead of where we are today. Okay, now, Hippocrates' first precept, as we all know, is first do no harm. But it's rarely fully translated, okay? The second part of it, loosely translated is then do some good, okay? All right, so patient safety isn't just about avoiding harm to the patient. You know, it's about making sure that something good comes out of the encounter. Dia talked about this in terms of, you know, the better outcomes, so that we, and of course, the data that we need to document that, okay? And that, but that leads me to talk about the three E's, and it's known, not Nadine's traditional three E's, you know, or three I's for that matter. It's the three E's of all medical research: efficacy, effectiveness, and efficiency. Okay, we've got lots of studies focusing on the efficacy of various, medical treatments, system designs, and so on. Although not many on system designs. Okay, but when one tries to translate those innovations to an entire system, okay, it's much, much more difficult to demonstrate, their value. Okay, and then, of course, without knowing the effectiveness of a particular treatment, which is basically how an efficacious treatment works in the real world, okay, all right, then we need to know, is where's the value, okay? You know, basically value, as you know, is benefit over cost. And so we need to know really, really what the actual benefit is and then know what the cost is so we can make accurate determinations about our public dollars in terms of how we invest them in emergency medical services, which leads us back to the problem that EMS, once again, is part of government, which is both a good thing and a bad thing. It's a good thing because it means all of us have access to it. Okay, it's not such a good thing because stuff that's at the end of the governmental food chain, okay, gets the crumbs in terms of the funding. Of course, that's another reason why we're in, you know, the situation that we're in sitting in this room today. But clearly we need, more research on efficacy without any question, but far more on efficacy and a ton more on efficiency, okay, because without those economic, okay, analyses, okay, we're in the soup in terms of arguing for more dollars when we're up against, organizations that have been around for 200 years longer than we have, namely fire and police. Okay, well, the science is solid and growing, and so we really know pretty well what we have to do to make things safer, right? Okay, so why don't we just do it, okay? You know, well, yeah, it's the economy, but is it really just the economy? Are there other issues as well? Okay, well, maybe there are. Let's think a little bit about this, okay? And this is one of my favorite concepts here. This is the iron triangle, okay? You can have it good, you can have it cheap, you can have it fast. Pick any two, okay? You can have it good and cheap, but it ain't going to be fast. You can have it good and fast, it ain't going to be cheap. You can have it cheap and fast, it ain't going to be good, okay? So pick any two, okay? All right? And we want it good, and we want it fast, so it's not going to be cheap, okay? And, we know it's got to be cheap because they fund us on the cheap, okay? It is not going to be fast, okay? And so progress is not going to accelerate at the rate we would like. I am frankly astonished we've seen the changes in the vehicle and system engineering that we've seen in the last 2 years, and hats off to all our mechanical and system engineers who've made those advances occur, but once again, we can't expect this problem to be solved in a day. Hopefully, we'll be back in 2 years, and there'll be even more progress. But once again, we've got to keep our shoulders to the wheel. The one thing we can do, okay, let's stop studying what we already know, okay. There's a ton of data out there, okay? That's what this Transportation Research Board exists to do, is to identify the data, fund its acquisition in appropriate cases. Based upon what we already know, okay, which is the efficacy part in large measure, okay, start doing, all right? Start doing. And many of us have. Many of us already have, as we saw from many of the elegant presentations today. So what are some of the simple things that we can do now, okay, that will not cost us a lot of money, that are already in our hands, okay? And by the way, Nadine, this is sort of my slide in terms of the question of what to say in 2 minutes about how to solve the world's problems in EMS safety, okay? Some things we can do now, okay? Let's get everybody to take the NAEMT EMS safety course, okay? That's within our grasp to do right now, okay? Right, Glenn?
Yes,
okay. You want to be on the road for the rest of your life, right?
Yeah,
okay, that's what I thought, okay? All right, but it's really important. It's really important, okay? What could be more important, you know, in a mobile health system than making sure that the transport part of it, you know, is as good as the treatment part of it? You know, nothing, right? So let's get that done. Let's follow the lead of some of our ambulance services worldwide that have put black boxes on the ambulances, you know, making sure that seat belts are fastened, that accelerometers are in place, and that, you know, feedback is being provided. You know, let's do that, okay? Let's make sure that, you know, that in all of our new ambulances, you know, and the old ones that we can easily retrofit, Let's get cellular and GPS, you know, properly installed so that our EMS providers don't have to use their hands while they're driving the vehicle, okay? All right? And I already mentioned this to Dia before she had to run up to Baltimore, but we've got a star of life, okay? All right? Why don't we have a star of lanes, so to speak? The road lanes, you know, the lanes that the ambulance, come up with some other name. I saw all I could think of on the quick, but, you know, We've sort of a good housekeeping seal of approval for ambulance services and ambulance vehicles that actually, you know, meet something like, a high level standard of patient safety. Now, it's going to take forever and a day for the regulators to do that job. Okay, they ought to. Okay, but you know they're going to have incredible resistance, you know, back home from everybody. In terms of getting those rules passed, okay? But what NACEMSO could do as an organization is say, we're going to say you can have a NACEMSO star of lanes or whatever you want to call it, a good housekeeping seal of approval that says your ambulance has agreed to meet these patient safety standards, okay? All right? And that would you know, at least begin to raise that bar. In terms of making sure that folks were up to snuff in terms of contemporary vehicle design. Now, is there some research we can do? And I pardon the pun here. I called it signal research because it relates specifically to our big bugaboo, which, as we all know, is lights and sirens. Okay? All right? But it also means signal research because it's signal in terms of its importance. Okay? Which calls really need a hot response? Damn few, as we all know. Okay? And we've got high-performance simulators, okay? And our keynote speaker this morning is holding a competition up in Baltimore, you know, talking about or was talking this morning about the use of high-fidelity human patient simulators, okay? To just see, you know, the kind of work that can be done. And what if we use those simulators to do some high-end research, look at figuring out which calls actually needed hot responses, okay? All right, we've got the technology, we've got the simulators. We're doing it up in Baltimore right now. Why can't we make a research project out of that and figure out which calls really need it and which ones really don't? And then how much time do lights and sirens really save? We've all heard about that apocryphal California yellow cab trial. You all know about that, right? That's when they set an ambulance and a yellow cab off at, you know, from one place to another. One going with lights and sirens and, you know, one just going the regular rules of the road. They got there within about 2 minutes of each other, you know. I mean, it was a famous editorial in ASAP a number of years ago. You know, it's apocryphal, but we don't know how much time the lights and sirens really save. We haven't really studied it in any meaningful, you know, effective way, okay? All right? And then, of course, that leads us into what's the question, or, you know, the question about the true cost benefit of lights and sirens, okay? How many lives, dollars are saved or lost? We don't know, all right? Wouldn't it be nice to have that information to tell our tax base providers, okay? And then, you know, most important with our incredible telecommunications capabilities available these days between healthcare providers on the scene and EMTs, or healthcare providers, I'm sorry, at their places of work and EMTs at the scene, why not leverage those telecommunications technologies to figure out if there's ways that patients can be treated and released at the scene so we can decrease the number of runs that actually have to be made, you know, and any time, of course, you've got, you know, you're not transporting a patient, okay, the chances for a patient having a bad outcome because of an ambulance crash are much reduced, right? Okay, so these are simple things that we can do. But what's the real challenge? The real challenge, and you all recognize Leonardo's Vitruvian Man here, okay, is how to change human nature, okay? Because all of us in this room, we love the rush, okay? That's why we're in EMS. We love the rush. So we love to rush, okay? So how do we change that, okay? How do we change that, okay? We use carrots, sticks. I think we've heard an awful lot about what I'm calling teleinformatics today, okay? The informatics, the collection of data, you know, telematics, the transmission of it, you know, so that it can be fed back to the EMS providers in real time using their smartphones, okay? Letting them know, hey, buddy, or hey, gal, slow down, okay? You're going too fast, okay? Just knock it off, okay? And if you do it again, well, you know, we'll figure out what we're going to do about that later. But right now, slow down, okay? All right, so we've got ways to solve these problems. And these are all simple things that we can do now, okay? So in summary, okay, we've got, in terms of the systems, strategies, and solutions approach that Nadine asked us to focus on, we've got a number of physical factors in which we've made great improvements. We've got human factors in which we've made not so great improvements but are beginning to develop the tools to do so. What are the strategies that allow us to do that? Okay, well, first of all, our engineers are terrific with their imaginations, okay, and their imaginations lead to innovations. And we've seen many of them, laid before our eyes and ears today, okay? But on the human factor side, it's leadership, 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 but also followership, okay? An important part of leadership is knowing when to step back, follow, and say, yes, you know more about this than I do, and I'm going to follow your lead. Okay, all right, and part of a good followership is honesty, you know, in terms of recognizing the truth that is spoken by a leader in terms of solid data, you know, and saying this is why we're doing X because, you know, we've got the data to prove, you know, that if we don't do X, we end up with Y and we don't want to go there, right? Okay, and then finally, in terms of the solutions, okay, we've talked about this already, okay, at great length, okay, vehicle design, okay, ergonomics, you know, are all helping us make the vehicles in which our patients are transported much, much, much more safe. And the informatics and the telematics are the things that are actually going to allow us to, you know, really, really move those human factors to the next level. So that's my last slide today. I defer to the, you know, the extraordinarily comprehensive summaries already provided by Dr. Cunningham and the Scanner. They laid it all out before I said a word and made my job very easy. But once again, I want to thank all of you for your attention, Nadine for the opportunity to speak, Rick for the opportunity for all of us to speak, I wish us all well and vast improvements in EMS safety by the next time we meet. Thank you.